wanted to talk about the motion that Mariel filed, and she filed it yesterday, so this is kind of breaking news. But as people who follow the Jupiter situation know, the proponents, the people who want to build a data center, have applied for an air quality permit, which they probably should not get, except the governor's kind of tipping the scales in favor of the project. And one of the things they were depending on, their application says we're going to get gas to our electricity plants. We're going to get gas by going across some state land. And that's a fine idea. But the state land commissioner, Stephanie Garcia-Richard, to her credit, I think, has twice refused to grant that permit, saying this is not in the interest of the people. It'll have minor job benefits, but not enough to make up for the devastating effect on our air quality. So sayonara. Well, Mariel is saying, and I think correctly, whether they're going to agree or not, okay, this plan they're asking you to approve depends on something that ain't going to happen. So reject it on that basis. If they revise it, amend it, whatever they do, fine. But at this point, why have an expensive hearing when what they're asking you to permit can't happen? So that could prevent or seriously delay the Jupiter project, or it may not at all. I don't know if you got to read up about it, but any thoughts?
Well, my thought is I don't know what the rules are with regard to the having of hearings, whether the hearing is like the first step. And even though we know that the denial of the pipeline path is a foregone conclusion, whether they would still have to have the hearing or whether that could be, you know, enjoined by by a judge or who would?
No, it's by the environmental department.
Yeah, I think they'll probably still go ahead with the hearing.
They probably will.
Yeah.
But it's going to involve a lot of expert witnesses on both sides. It'll be a multi-day hearing and cost us a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Thought we might hear from Mariel about it, but that's the basic information. Since we have Stephen Perez here with us, let's turn to this water issue with the city. The city sent people notice on Monday that there had been a there had been a technical violation, we'll call it for the moment, but a violation of procedures, New Mexico Environmental Department. Basically, in November 8th, I think, there had been a test, and they found something called complete
wasn't
complete
it coliform?
Total coliform.
Which can go with E. coli, or, you know, it's basically can go with finding fecal matter in the water, and you're supposed to retest within 24 hours. And in this situation, there was some problem that they either didn't test or didn't get the results. We'll talk to Stephen in a moment. But they didn't give us notice until this week, and want to thank Lynn Moore and Liz Rodriguez Johnson for following up on this, because it'd go right by me, and maybe because they don't like me, the city didn't give us, my wife and I didn't get any notice, and we are in that water area. But what happened, Stephen? First of all, am I correct? November 8th, you get a result that that shows this bad substance. When did you retest?
There within 24 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why were not any results until a month later,
well,
December 5th.
The real issue was that the paperwork was filled out incorrectly.
Okay.
And so it appeared we did not sample the correct locations, the wells, in due time.
In other words, somebody at the city misinformed NMED about which wells you had tested?
Correct. It's the paperwork that you have to fill out to send to the laboratory, and NMED winds up reviewing it. And when they looked at it, the well identifications were incorrect for several locations.
Okay. You need to be real close to the microphone because you speak softly, not like me.
I can turn it up.
she's turning it up, but
okay.
You can speak louder.
Too. Okay.
And this is important because obviously we could have had in a month a lot of people with E. coli. I might be not talking so fast. And – yeah, we didn't know. So what are we doing to make sure we don't make that kind of mistake again?
Basically, we have to be a little more diligent with our paperwork and make sure that our water operators are using the correct well IDs again. So basically putting some labels, signs near the wells with those identifications, and basically having a second set of eyes on the paperwork before it goes out.
With regard to notifying water consumers, how were people notified? Because I don't think I got a notification.
So it depends what service area you're in primarily.
Oh.
But this was strictly – we have 5 water systems in the city under Las Cruces Utilities. And so basically, if you were in the Las Cruces Municipal Service Area, then we would have sent the notice to you based on billing accounts, so customer information that we have. And so there was over 30,000 notices that were sent out based on billing addresses.
Well, there should have been 30,001.
How can somebody find out what service area they're in? Is there a map?
Tell him the general area you live.
Yeah, I live in the neighborhood that's across from Oregon Mountain High School.
Oregon Mountain High School. Okay. So you could be in the Hacienda Acres.
Okay.
But you can call me or send me an email or call customer service, and they can look up what area you're in.
Oh, okay.
Yep. What's the number for customer service if people want to call up and find out, or do you know?
575-541-2111.
Okay.
Yep.
So people can find out if they were in the – but it appears that although there were problems with notification and paperwork, that there was not actually a period where there were very bad unhealthy substances like fecal matter.
That's correct. Your water, the water was retested. The location that had a positive hit for coliform was retested within that 24-hour period, and the results came back negative.
But because of the screw up, you guys were legally required to notify us, right?
Correct.
Why did it take so long?
Because this is what they call a Tier 3 violation. And Tier 3 violations, you technically have a year to send out the public notice.
Tier 3 being?
Tier 3, no immediate danger to human health.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems to me that the process of getting water tested is a little bit Byzantine because – I was reading about the Doña Ana Mutual Water Users Association uranium excess.
Right.
And what they said on their webpage was that NMAD had saved up like 4 sets of tests and then tested them all at once. And so it was quite a long period of time. And then it hit positive on too much uranium. And then they had to take that well offline. So I don't know if NMED is just like slow or what the story is, why it is taking so long to be able to let people know if there's something unsafe.
I would say one big issue is the turnaround time with the laboratories that they send the water samples to.
Gotcha. Anything else we should know about this snafu?
Well, we definitely don't want it to occur again, and we're going to do the best we can to ensure that that doesn't, you know, doesn't happen, and we have to send out a notice like this again. I think it's something kind of inherent, unfortunately, that there is human error at times, but anytime there's something that happens, Las Cruces Utilities is very diligent to correct it and take corrective actions and ensure public safety.
Okay, well, we have a lot of other questions about Las Cruces Utilities and would love to have the director or whoever she designates come on with us next week, 9:30 to 10, to talk about some other criticisms people make that I won't burden you with because you just came to talk about this one issue this morning. But let your boss know that she'll be hearing from us with a courteous invitation to join us on this show.
All right. I'll gladly let her know.
Okay. Yeah.
And thank you for having me.
Look forward to talking with her. And thank you for coming over. Clearly, the city took this seriously because we don't usually get a communication late in the evening saying, hey, could we come on your show tomorrow?
Right, yeah.
But you're certainly welcome, and if there's ever anything else you need to tell the public, give us a call.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for visiting with
us. Thank you much.
Michigan Senate race.
Yeah, now CNN has called it for Abdul El-Sayed. And Haley Stevens has conceded, and she has offered him her support.
Good.
Going into the general. So.
Yeah, if people have not been following the Michigan Senate race, and I can't say I've been following it that closely, the two major candidates, there was a third candidate who got 4% of the vote, but it was a real where's the Democratic Party going kind of thing in that Mr. El-Sayed was a former health department person in Wayne County, but more on the Democratic Socialist side of the spectrum rather than the conservative Democrat side of the spectrum. And his opponent, Ms. Stevens, was more – and we got endorsed by – all the major, conventional politicians. But what's the right way to say it?
Well, I would say she is a centrist, but a huge amount of money was spent by outside entities on her campaign.
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting issue. And feel free to call us if you have an opinion on it at 575-526-5825. But where's the Democratic Party? James Carville said basically, if these Democratic Socialists are in, I'm out. And he's always been a guy that talks good sense. But if he were in the room, I'd say something impolite to him, within the constraints of radio. Because personally, I think both parties, please agree or disagree, both parties are too much beholden to big money, big corporations, wealth. We have, over the last 70 years, moved towards a more equal society. And, since probably 75 or 80, way back, we've been moving toward worse economic inequality. And that is not good for anybody. You can say it's good for Jeff Bezos or whomever that, he's going to have a fortune of $2,600,600,000 instead of that plus 400 at the end. Or, he's going to have an extra 20. It's like in your budget having an extra 29 cents. Really doesn't make much difference in your monthly budget. Certainly makes none in his ability to do whatever he wishes to do in life or buy whatever he wants to buy.
Including elections.
Yeah. So I think both parties ought to, you know, we need more, not necessarily socialism as such, but more concern about the average person. And I think that's part of what even the Trumpists would like. They're just not seeing it from either party. So why not have this baboon come in and throw a monkey wrench in the works? Because the works ain't working for me.
Who's the baboon in your metaphor there?
I think it's the one who's firing his friend Gene Pirro now. He hasn't decided. But it's the guy who says, I contracted with somebody to make the reflecting pools better. No, he didn't screw up. It must have been bad people coming with a knife and going the whole length of the pool messing this up.
Well, this morning they said that the only person or people with a knife were engineers from the National Park Service who decided it would probably be better for the reflecting pool if the loose stuff were cut off rather than flapping around. So once again, you know, not vandalism.
But he can't accept even that.
Right.
Which is pretty minor. I mean, it's a kind of a who cares if you say, well, they contracted to fix the waiting pool. And, you know, other than the fact that he kind of interfered and chose the people, who cares really? It's not like the war in Iran or, you know, cutting off people's medical care or all the other things that are going on. It's pretty minor. But he can't even let that go. Even when his own longtime pal, who spoke up for him on Fox News since he got into politics, when the D.C. prosecutors, when they decide, no, there's no case here against this poor guy that, you know, they brought a case against to save face for the baboon, just let it go. and it's, you know, it's more dangerous in situations where he's prosecuting people like Comey, and he's trying to make the case that taking pictures of somebody's clever stones saying 86-47 is a threat to kill the president. I mean, you know, our friend Bernie worked in a bar when he was younger, and when they said 86, that guy, he didn't take it to mean, you know, bring out a 22 and shoot him. it's just stupid, vicious, undermines what credibility he might have, should anyway, except he gets a pass from everybody that likes him.
And even I think the press plays a role in this by just reporting straight, you know, the president said this or the president said that without then going and fact-checking the actual situation.
Right.
In most cases of other presidents, perhaps that would have been a reliable metric of the truth. But in this particular administration, the second Trump administration, it's not.
No.
So that's a bit exasperating. You know, in terms of the entry of more populist or more left-wing politicians into the Democratic Party, I think we shouldn't forget that the Overton window in this country has really shifted to the right, and that most centrist Democrats in this country would be way right of center in any other country.
Yes.
And so things that other countries take for granted, like universal health care, are still seen as
–
you know, so wacky left-wing idea in the United States. And it creates a situation where people suffer, and they needn't suffer. They almost are choosing their own suffering by not looking at other countries to see that, yes, a better way of life is possible here.
Yeah, and countries like Norway, they're not socialist.
Right.
But they pay more attention to their people. Yeah, they charge more in taxes, but you don't end up having to pay health care, huge health care costs. and other things that we end up paying some company. And, you know, it struck me a long time. I mean, I know that the businesses like to say socialism. And socialism, other than in, perhaps in Kerala, which is a province in India, socialism has not worked very well, partly because people take control who are really not socialist and they're doing things in their own interest. But it certainly is the case. When I went to China, it was fascinating to see, compared to what we hear here, what was good and what was not so good about their socialist system. And there were some things that were very good. But if you went into the stores that served foreigners, you know, people who were having a conversation behind the counter kept on having their conversation, even if you were standing there by the cash register hoping to check out and go on your way. They kept talking. You know, we'll get to you when we get a chance. And so there is some argument that a complete socialist system weakens people's motivation to do what they should in their jobs. I think that's minimal compared to the fact that everybody had a Ruth. I mean, you'd go to India and see 50 beggars and somebody going by in Rolls Royce looking at them. In China, you didn't see the Rolls Royce, but you didn't see people without a home and without clothing and, you know, what they food, what they needed. Anyway, we could do a lot. I mean, if you're living in Taiwan or traveling in Peru or my father-in-law in Japan, it's accepted. There's public health care, and it works fine. And you go to the doctor, and maybe you spend $2.50 for a visit. That's every other civilized nation in the world, and maybe some that aren't that civilized.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. But I understand the issue that, you know, okay, there are a lot of people in the middle who will be worried if the Republicans call everybody socialists. They're going to call them that anyway.
Well, right. But also – I don't see what it is that they're worried about. I mean, people are having a very hard time making ends meet right now. Inflation has made the price of just basic goods and services really unaffordable. People experience medical bankruptcy. The price of gas is very high. And so what is it that people are glomming onto that they're afraid to lose in a system in which we take a little bit better care of each other?
I agree. I actually, people used to, you know, in the late 60s, they used to talk about people who are welfare cheats. And I used to know very well what my taxes were because I was a cab driver and I had to split with the owners of the cabs every evening. I had to bring, you know, here's what I made. They gave me 51% and they took 49% and so much went to taxes. So if I'm made $75 in an evening total, you know, I got a fair share of that. And the government got $1 or whatever it was. And I'm thinking, you know, if some welfare cheat can live on, you know, out of that buck, some's going for military, and it may maybe some welfare cheat is getting 25 cents. And if he can live on 25 cents a day, more power to him. It ain't hurting me.